Welcome to Paper Money, the biweekly podcast covering the business side of the game industry, from something that starts with X to something that starts with X. You know, Rhett, I apologize. Every show for the last 52 episodes, I have come up with games, and I refuse to go sync to an X-Man licensed title.
X and Q.
Why are they in the English language? A different show.
I think it's because they finalized this. Never mind. Let's not go that route. Anyways, I'm Ben Clark.
And I'm Rhett Kim.
Today is June 24th, 2011.
Wow.
Yes, exactly. It would have been an earlier date, but someone whose initials are RK spaced a little bit and completely forgot that we were supposed to record the show. So we're sorry we're running a little bit late, because half of you are at Origins anyway, and the other half of you are wishing you were at Origins. So really, none of you care.
Yeah, why aren't you at Origins? Yeah, that's really, I think, that this is our Origins preview show, which is occurring during Origins.
That's all for tonight. Thanks. Good night, folks. No, seriously, we got a couple of fun news items, and we're going to talk about summer releases and their importance and or maybe over-importance in the hobby sector. But first, I want to mention somebody who haven't mentioned in a few weeks, and that would be our awesome sponsor, PurplePawn.com. Awesome news site. Our podcast is hosted over there. If you haven't gone by, check them out. And that said, let's move right into the news.
Well, we need to talk about the fact that there are, yet again, no corrections this week.
Fine. Yes, there are no corrections this week and no guest.
Okay, we're done.
Yeah, I'm going to quit mentioning that, actually. So, you know, I need to get a cube further away from my boss, and then I can make phone calls. So, at work. Anyways, I digress. The news this week. I just love this.
It's my favorite one.
Well, the amusing thing is I got it from a music website, was where it turned up first in my web search. AC/DC Monopoly game announced by Parker Brothers.
Okay, I love
it. It's not Parker Brothers anymore. And two, the licensed games are all USAopoly.
Yeah, and well, there we go.
So, but there's going to be an AC/DC Monopoly game. I'm very excited by this because I saw AC/DC, the all-female tribute band that only does Bon Scott AC/DC cover tunes, at Gen Con several years ago at one of the last block parties.
Yeah, they were great. They had a great concert.
Yes, and you know, did I tell you the really cool thing? Hell's Bells, which is the all-female AC/DC tribute band that only does Brian Johnson era tunes, is actually playing here in Michigan in the very near future.
Awesome.
Yes, so I can make a clean sweep, and then I can get the AC/DC Monopoly game. I'm really licensed. So
is it chance and, you know, and community chest? Exactly what do you get? Anyway,
I guess
I'm not going there. I'm backing it out.
Folks, this is how this works. The people you loved as children or teenagers have no shame anymore.
No, you know, they're in their 50s now, yes. And they'll take the money yes. Anyway they can
and
get.
And folks in the mass market game industry never have had any shame.
No.
So, that said, let's move on. I thought this was interesting, by the way. This is from the Purple Pawn. Martin Wallace is previewing A Few Acres of Snow. This is a deck-building war game. It's an interesting fusion, and possibly I wonder if this is an indicator of the progression of the Dominion meme, where you have deck-building within the game. But it's the French and English struggle for North America in the 17th and 18th centuries. Now, and the reason I do this is because, honestly, we're talking about a pretty hardcore historical war game theme, but it's Martin Wallace, and I mean, it's not that he's never done a historical, and I think he's got one or two coming out this year, but it's a Dominion, you know, it's a deck-building Martin Wallace hardcore historical game. I just thought that was a very interesting combination and one that I'm interested in seeing.
Well, you know, they just did a spin on these things. There's a couple of them, I forget the name of the company offhand, but they're based off of Japanese anime. One's really risque and the other's on Maids, which is a subset of the anime section. And apparently the game is really great. And the Dominion guys are really discovering it in our local area and like it more than Dominion as far as the gameplay is concerned. The subject matter is a little strange, but it pretty much proves that you can go anywhere with this concept. And I'm sure in the next 2 years, they will.
Yeah, I suspect as stuff starts getting developed, that we are going to start seeing a lot more of the deck building titles. And frankly, it's a cool mechanic.
Yes.
I mean, I'll keep playing deck building games for a while just because they change. They're interesting. I will say that they're going to run into some of the same difficulties that the card-driven war games ran into, which is that there's only so far you can go with the format.
Right.
Right. It does. It's very interesting and it's very dynamic and it adds a depth to a game to gameplay. But once you create your system, there's only so many ways you can create your system, so to speak. But anyways, again, so this is I think this game is not coming out this summer. But A Few Acres of Snow by Martin Wallace. Like I said, deck building. Martin Wallace, hardcore historical French English struggle for North America, 17th and 18th century. Sounds interesting. By the way, I say hardcore historical just because the topic is hardcore historical. The game gives no indication of being hardcore historical that I know of.
So, yeah, it's an odd subject matter to have chosen as your starting point in the universe, so to speak.
Yes, but you know what? It's Martin Wallace. He can do what he wants.
Well, and it's Dominion. It's pretty abstract.
Well, yes, true. So
onwards.
Onwards. And this is the other big news of the week, as far as actually, this is probably the big news of the week, given how much we've harped on this. All 13 of the Vampire the Masquerade revised era clan books are now available as physical printed books. Now, this is listed as through RPGnow.com, but I believe they're available elsewhere as well, Rhett?
I believe as well, yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. So I think it was just RPG Now. But we've been trying to figure out what Weifel Wolf is doing for over a year by only having PDFs available. And all of a sudden, there are 13 clan books back on the market after a year.
Yeah. I had an interesting discussion with a fan the other day, which was a little insightful on our end. That was that, you know, people really seem to dislike, the fan base seems to really dislike the new universe. I don't know if it was the play of the game that they disliked, but they didn't like the fiction and really were clamoring for the old stuff. And so apparently White Wolf is listening. Here we go. There you go. 13 clans all at once.
Wow. And so apparently they wanted them on paper.
Yeah. Well, you know, gamers are both high tech at one level and absolutely, you know, give me my old sticks and stones kind of situation.
Well, we are gamers. We're belts and suspenders. I want the printed book, but I'd like the PDF.
Yes.
You know, so I can look at it on the, you know, basically.
I can take it with me.
I can put it in my Dropbox and read it at work.
Yeah. That's how that works. Never happened.
No. Uh-uh. I wasn't reading the Civil War Brigade series rules today at lunch at all. Or after lunch, in fact. But anyways, okay.
You know, I work in a game store. You participate in gaming more at work than I do.
No, you trust me. I only wish. Suffice to say, this just came out. Risk is becoming a movie. This is a part of that huge ink deal that Hasbro hoodwinked some Hollywood studio. I mean, this deal that they had to make five titles in a fairly short amount of time. And apparently, yeah. Risk is going to be a movie.
I like the idea of the Risk movie. It's a conquer the universe. You know, it's conquer the world concept. It will be the giant D6. Who gets to play the giant D6? That's really what I want to know.
I just want to know who gets to be the – I just want to know if the troops are going to be like the old Roman numeral troops or the new ones.
Well, or it could be the block troops, the wooden block troops.
Oh, yeah. But see, now they have shapes. You know, they have cavalry and cannons and stuff. But anyways, Risk is going to become a movie. Look for more stuff on this. I think they've even announced the writer, the director, and I forget who. He has a credit you may have heard of before, but I didn't care.
Is Sylvester Stallone playing in this one? Do we know yet?
No, I have a dollar says that it's a different. It's not. Or here's the thing: you have to have the guy conquering the world be a hero.
Why?
And if somebody who wants to take over, because it's that kind of movie. You don't make a movie based on Risk or a Hasbro title and have it be dark and evil.
You never know.
So whoever conquers the world has to be a good guy. So look for that as a plot point.
All right.
Next up, we've been talking about digital games a lot, and this just came out today. So theoretically, it's a good thing that we delayed the show. But WizKids is launching an online HeroClix game with an open but paid beta program. By the way, this story is from thepurplepawn.com. It's an open but paid beta program. It's starting immediately. HeroClix Online will provide a 3D virtual tabletop where players can add their HeroClix figures, starting with the Hammer of Thor and Fantastic Four sets. Just don't get me started. And play with up to 64 people in a single tournament. Those who join the beta by July 5th will receive an exclusive figure when the game goes live. I'm assuming that's an exclusive digital figure. Rhett, what do you think?
I think it's a really cool thing, mostly because I really like the potential. The game, from the electronic standpoint, is pretty simple to do. You're keeping track of some very simple wheel type mechanics. Mm-hmm. The boards are squares, so the movement is fairly mm-hmm. easy and simple as far as the electronic end of it is concerned relative to, an open table and all the other stuff. Terrain operates inside of a square, blah, 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 blah. And in the HeroClix universe, terrain is pretty obvious. It's a table, it's a wall, it's not ambiguous at all. And so I think this is a good starting point for them.
I think this is as dumb as a bag of hammers.
And there you have it. But, my son on the opposite end of this, my personal favorite one that I've always kind of, sat there and scratched my head.
Your personal favorite son?
Yes, my personal favorite son, my one and only personal favorite son. My personal favorite weird game, electronic conversion mm-hmm. game, is Magic, the virtual card game.
See, this is where I was going with this, is that Wizards has been trying to crack the code for how to make a collectible game electronic since 1995.
Yeah.
And it has they have tried at least three times before that I know of. There's two Magic the Gathering attempts that failed, and I want to say there was one other one. Maybe it wasn't Wizards who did that. And I have an issue with the whole online collectible. Yeah, I don't know that it works real well. At least with tabletop type games. I'm sure the Pokemon players will tell me that they have 75,000, individual Pokemons electronically and stuff like that. But that's not the card game.
Well, and then go with the same situation applies to, a lot of the virtual game things. And Neopets is an example, where people are collecting up all the different Neopet things. And human beings like to collect stuff. It's just a bad habit.
Maybe figures will work better than the idea of collecting virtual cards.
I'm thinking that that's a possibility because at least it moves. It's iconic. It's theoretically 3D. Having not seen it, I don't really know. And the nice thing from WizKids' standpoint is if it succeeds, boy, do they have a stable to tap into. I mean, the whole Star Trek thing coming up. And
I think what they're doing is that they're hoping that the movie tie-in's going to help this take off.
Yeah, and, with the re-release of Mage Knight, they're going to have a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm. So, all right. Well, we'll see how it goes. Like I said, my personal opinion is that this has not worked before, and I don't know that it's going to work again. But, I'll be the first one to say I have been wrong before.
Yeah, I'm glad, no matter how it works out, I'm always glad to see people taking a chance, trying to make some ground up here.
I was the one who bankrolled Stickman, the collectible card game. No distracting art. Every booster included one blank card so you could make your own card.
There we go.
So, I mean, you laugh. I think Jim Foley and I really did have, or at least Ivan and I had art for that.
Yeah, I was going to say.
We were working on Stickman.
It was cruising along for a while. I thought that the booster decks were all just blanks.
No, you got to put some in there. So, although now we could just steal art from xkcd.com. But I digress. Let's move on. So we wanted to talk about summer releases last week, and then we got Rhett went on a tear about retail packaging and a well thought out tear, I might add. We did get some reader response to that, but wanted to talk about summer releases. And now, Rhett, do you want to want me to read through the FFG August release list?
I'll let you read through the list. List is spectacular, and oddly, this is just 1 month.
This
To FFG's credit, this is not their summer releases. This is August.
Yes, this is just August. AUK folks, you ready? Arcana Revised Edition, Gears of War, the board game, Hey, That's My Fish, and The Adventurers, The Pyramid of Horus. Now, if you recall, Adventurers had been AEG, right?
Yeah.
So now we have our first.
Hey, That's My Fish used to be a Mafra title.
Exactly. And still is, if you talk to some people. But anyways, there are four. These are the standalone games. Now here's the expansions for the LCGs, for the living card games. Game of Thrones, the card game, Here to Serve. Game of Thrones, Princes of the Sun. Call of Cthulhu, Kingsport Dreams. Call of Cthulhu, Shifting Sands. Lord of the Rings, the card game. The Hills of Emian Mule. There's a Tolkien guy somewhere going to correct me on that. Warhammer Invasion, The Inevitable City. Those are the LCG expansions. Now, here are the Dust Tactics expansions. Axis Guerrillas, Axis Zombies, Grim Reapers, Tank Busters. Here are the expansions for Tannhauser. Tannhauser Iroh, Tannhauser Shogunate Troop Pack. All right, so that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 games coming out in August.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you that they're going to have at least one or two October releases at Gen Con with these 16.
I think these are their actual August releases, not to be confused with the 20 games that will probably at Gen Con, of which, you know, a whole lot of them won't be available until around Christmas time.
All right. So speaking of dumb as a bag of hammers, is this a good idea or not? What do you think, Red?
Well, you know, understand the reason for all this stuff. And everybody does it. And, the problem is economics. And there's two economics that they're dealing with. And it's one of the fights that I had for years about some of the choices. Mm-hmm. The main economics of it is there is a summer surge. However, the summer surge started like 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, when we hit Memorial Day. Mm-hmm. And that's really the beginning of it. Kids are out of school. There's more time to play. Kids have summer jobs, et cetera, et cetera. So there's more money to tap into. Mm-hmm. So money and time, the two things that everybody needs to be a great gamer. The other aspect of this is purely economic on the manufacturer's points, which is to effectively reduce the cost of going to the big shows, Origins not being a killer, but Gen Con being dynamic. And mm-hmm. even for the big players in our industry, as opposed to the, you know, other aspects of gaming, it's a huge cost. I mean, yes. You know, it's an average. So people have an idea, since we've talked about this a number of times, we've never really put money out there. Mm-hmm. The average cost for a booth, for like a freestanding booth, is between $1,300 and $1,500 for a 10 by 10 foot booth. Most of these people have around 24 to 30 booths that we're talking in terms of. Even the small people tend to have like six or eight.
By small people, give me an example here.
White Wolf last year, who basically had this cubbyhole little niche of like a 6x4, I think.
Yeah, it was fairly small. It wasn't huge. Certainly for a company that makes that much noise. So you're looking at what? 6 times 1,500. We're looking at that's $10,000 basically.
It's $10,000 for the booth space, and then you have to man it. Mm-hmm. It's about $200 a night per person that you got that you're putting up for, you know, mm-hmm. the show. There's food expenses that have to be included in that. If you're a bigger player, there's always some kind of party because, frankly, that's, you know, mm-hmm. expected of you. I can just say it's what we're talking about is, for most of these people, it's probably averaging between $30,000 to $100,000, depending on where you fall in the.
Yeah, but are you going to do $100,000 in sales? I mean, unless you're FFG.
Do you need to do $100,000?
I guess you only need to do 30 if you have a booth.
If you did $30,000, I was going to say, if you've done $30,000 as your booth space,
mm-hmm.
then you probably need to do about, now remember that they do have a some level of cost in here. And in a lot of cases, I will, though I know there are retailers who think this isn't true, they do fly these games in specifically for this. Why? Because they have about 10 minutes of window that they can get their games out from when they're supposed to in order to make the show. And they tend to miss their windows on a regular basis with some of their products, mm-hmm. which means that they have to fly product in from overseas.
Okay, but fly, oh, sure, but you're not going to fly in 16 titles. I mean, I guess here's why I'm here's,
oh,
here's
you are a, mistaken.
Okay, all right, you're right, I am mistaken because I've seen it happen again and again and again. Here's where I'm going with this, right? Is that that's just August. Okay, now granted it's FFG, but okay, so say that there's 30 other companies out there that all release an average of 3 products a piece in August. That's 90 products.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure it is an understatement, especially, you know, especially the role-playing stuff.
And they're all big products.
Yeah, so let's say that there's another 200 big products, or at least another 200 products, okay? There's role-playing expansions. So we're looking at, you know, 200 new products month of August alone, and there's only so much buzz that can be generated. There's only so much money that the gamer has to spend at that time. I think you're better off releasing games in May, right? At the beginning of May, so you can take advantage of the whole summer selling surge, or releasing it in October and picking up that third quarter, the third quarter stuff. Cause once the game, once the Gen Con buzz wears off, okay.
Well,
which happens about really realistically by the time the games actually come out and at the end of October, what's the new stuff? I think that November is a perfectly good time to launch a game.
Well, October, November, you know, you're trying to get it out. You're trying to get it out into, depending on what you're trying to accomplish with it, you're trying to get it into the stores for the Christmas season, be it as a Christmas gift later or as, you know, the new big thing that you're going to tie into earlier.
And I guess here's the thing. And the board game people are starting to see this. A lot of the buzz now is coming out of BGG.com. Right, which is basically the same. Usually, it's the weekend before Thanksgiving, same weekend as Chi-Tag.
Right,
that convention is generated. There's, I think, the attendance this year is 1,200, and that is generating a huge amount of buzz given the attendees for board games. Now, if you're an RPG guy or a miniatures guy, don't, you know, spend your money trying to promo at BGG.com. But that one seems to be generating a lot of buzz because stuff is coming right from, was it Essen that's right before that?
Yeah, Essen is the big show in Europe, and that's the other big board game end of
we're seeing. But I think that's the real problem, I think, is we're trying to take advantage of this summer selling season, and Gen Con is so late in the summer, comparatively speaking. I mean, now, granted, it's now the first week of August. But
yeah, but this is a fluke. This is an unusually early Gen Con, as it's an unusually early Origins.
Somebody told me next year Origins is going to be even earlier.
I don't think that's a problem. I mean, they used to target around the 4th of July weekend, and I always thought that was a little odd since it seemed too late in the year.
Well, they're now talking the first weekend in June, which I think is way too early.
I think that's too early because the kids are still in school in some cases.
Exactly. If you're on the quarter system, usually, you know, Flag Day, June 14th.
Yeah. I mean, the problem I see with it is it's finals. And now your college students may or may not be out of it, you know, maybe finally out of it, but your high schoolers aren't.
Yes.
And no one's going anywhere during finals.
Exactly. So, yeah, that's something I was a little concerned about. But I had heard that. It's unverified. So, in fact, they probably published on the website last year and I just didn't even look at it. But, anyways, let's get back to our story here, which is, summer releases. Now they are important, but I think that what FFG is doing is gross overkill. I think they're going to get now it's FFG. So, you know, everyone who plays Game of Thrones, the living card game, is going to go and buy these two packs. And everyone who plays Call of Cthulhu is going to do this. But if you play both games, all of a sudden, buy this or do I? I really wanted to get into Dust Tactics because that looked cool, but.
Well, you know, the spin I'll put on it is in FFG's case, they have just the biggest group of products out there of anybody. You know, they've.
Okay,
there's
you're
nothing,
right. You're right. Let's pick a smaller company.
Let's talk about Catalyst Game Labs. We could talk about Catalyst Game
Labs. Summer when I go to Gen Con, I am inundated with BattleTech product and I can't buy it all at once.
Yeah, there's BattleTech, there's Shadowrun, there's all the new releases, and oddly enough, with the release schedule being as, pardon the term, wonky as it can be, there might be half of the year's releases at Gen Con.
Yes, and this is a small company, because FFG can always make the case is singular. But for a small company, all of a sudden, this is a problem too. Your cash flow is now all bottled up at once, right? Because you're going to produce all this stuff. It has to sell all at once, and then you've got to wait for the batteries to recharge. Meantime, you do not have a steady income stream on your product. And if you wanted to buy all the Shadowrun, maybe you couldn't.
Right. So I agree. I guess, you know, we see this from a number of companies. Amarillo is a good example. Amarillo tends to have a big Origins target release for SFB, Starfleet Battles, where they'll come out with maybe four products. You know, rest of the year they'll come out with a single product at a time. And all of a sudden, boom, four products at once. Mm-hmm. And, you know, things aren't inexpensive anymore, though.
No, they're not. They're not at all.
You know, financial relationships being what they are, perhaps they're no more expensive than they were, you know, back when I was buying them at $9 that they're now, you know, $40. But the question comes down to be simply a matter of, could you still afford it? What was your, you know, what is your income versus everything else? And could you actually buy all those things at once? I mean, you know, we're looking at, the reason I brought up Amarillo is Amarillo's just done this deal with Mongoose with the whole Starfleet Battles universe. And, you know, they're going to come out with what looks like a major group of releases around the Christmas era. Again, can you buy into it all at once? The only people that do that are retailers. You know, do the consumers have to pick and choose? And the retailers have to guess as close to correctly as they can which titles to pick and choose on, which ones to go heaviest on, which I think is, you know, which I think puts a lot of burden on both distribution, who's making the same kind of guesses to try to maintain the flow of product, help the manufacturers out so the manufacturers have an idea of, you know, I really need to print 25% more of this product than I do of normal because it is going to be the success of my group. But I can't because no one knows, you know, how much money to invest into it.
Well, this is actually another good point that you raise, Red, is that a lot of times as a retailer and as a manufacturer, the distributor is your friend. Right. The distributor can pitch your product if you're a manufacturer, if the time is right, if, you know, and you can do a little push, you can do sales flyers. If you're a retailer, you can count on the distributor to sometimes, give you a tip off one way or the other. When there are this many new products coming out at the same time, everybody's blind. Okay. Unless you have a really good inventory program and you can look at your sales history, which quite frankly, in the game industry, most people don't have, you're going off of intuition. And in terms of ordering products at the distributor level and in terms of recommending products at the distributor level, you lose that. I think it, and you and I remember this, Red, as well. I remember sending out twice daily faxes. This is back in the 90s, folks, with updates of what was coming out because we were getting so many new products.
Right. I mean, the problem is that everybody is inundated with it for, you know, what seems to be the right answer for you as the manufacturer. I am trying to accomplish this goal. Is a good choice for yourself. The problem is when there are 100 manufacturers all trying to accomplish the same goal in the same window. And instead of having a nice product flow throughout the summer, a nice product flow throughout the year, there are these, you know, massive crash moments, and products win and lose. You know, the answer is a product that might have succeeded quite well had you chosen to release it at a different time of year suddenly is overwhelmed by all this other product. And it may not even be that much better than you. It may be, you know, lots of expansions for games that people are already dealing with. You know, my best example of, you know, what can happen is the release of Magic. An unusual circumstances for sure, but it's a great way to show what goes on, which is everything that released the summer of Magic was forgotten. no matter how good it was, no matter who it came out from. GW, Games Workshop, used to complain on end that they never wanted to hear another word about Magic because, frankly, their product was just as good as it always had been, and their customers would buy it just the same. People weren't paying attention, including the retailers, weren't paying attention to it anymore because it wasn't generating as much sales.
Mm-hmm. Well, and certainly, when Magic first came out, I mean, guys were talking to 3, 4, 5 distributors trying to get product lined up.
Absolutely.
And it took up a lot of time, a lot of brain space as a retailer to try and order, to get your product.
And as I say, this is an exception. Yeah. But what I was trying to point out, though, is that because of its success, nothing else could be successful. It was an overwhelming success, and nothing else could be successful around it.
Sure.
So products that would normally have done great were suddenly just overwhelmed. And that's the same problem that you're looking at when you get mass releases, is that even your own products are competing with yourself. Privateer. Privateer has this every year, or Privateer comes out with a whole bunch of new products for Gen Con.
Mm-hmm.
And to my opinion, they're almost really hurting themselves, because anything that's new that isn't part of this line or that line that's continuous is just getting overwhelmed by the mass of stuff that's coming out.
Exactly. And this is my point, is that I know that there are valid reasons that the game companies do this, but I really think it's a disservice, because what I think really happens is it all comes out at Gen Con, or it all comes out, between Origins and Gen Con, or more realistically, it comes out between Origins and the end of October, having, had a few boxes at Gen Con or Origins.
Right.
And then it sits on a shelf. Yeah, everyone's exposed to it and says, well, this is really cool, but no one can afford it until the end of spring break.
Well, and you just pointed out another
one. You can't afford
it
all, right? So you buy your first tier stuff, and your second tier stuff still sits on the shelf until spring break, when you could have, as a company, released it and had maybe slightly more sales. I don't know.
And you did point out one of the other ones that I think is really important to the manufacturers, which is that if you've got a product that you're showing off at Gen Con, and it can be in the stores right then, it's a great thing.
Yes.
If you've actually got that product that's not going to show up until the end of September, it may be lost. Not that it is lost in the mix. It's just September is one of those lull periods. You'd be better off in some cases to have it hold off until the opening of the Christmas season in October.
Mm-hmm.
There's all sorts of things. I mean,
Monster Apocalypse.
One of my favorite
they
ones.
They did that. Remember, they had it at Gen Con.
Yes, they had
and
it
then
at
it
Gen
didn't
Con
come in until
and they held
November.
It off. Right. They held it off until the Christmas season. They got the buzz that they wanted out of it, but they didn't do the real launch until the Christmas season.
And it launched huge, yeah.
And they launched huge, and it did really well because of that. And, the other ones that I was going to use as an example of that was when D&D was under the TSR banner, and Gen Con was under the TSR banner. Mm-hmm. It was critical for the new D&D core to show up at Gen Con. Critical.
Yes.
And then Wizards took it over, and it moved around a bit and that. And suddenly, it didn't matter anymore from their standpoint. What mattered was, when can it get the best impact? And suddenly, third edition releases when? Not in August. It releases Memorial Day weekend. And that's so that they can capitalize on that whole summer buying period, which surprises me that we don't see people try to do a bit more of.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of where I was going with that. And I'm sure there was a marketing wonk at Hasbro who did some maths and found out that Memorial Day weekend was the best time to release that. Anyways, we're going to go ahead and wrap that up. So, Red, like I said, I think too many games come out in the summer trying to ride the buzz wave, and it doesn't work for everybody. So I think they should spread them out more. What's your take?
I'm in agreement. I understand the logic of why some of the things need to be, and that's not to say that you can't have some of the stuff. I would just like to see a better spread through the summer as opposed to these real big concentrations right around the conventions. And typically it's one convention or the other, depending on which side of the register, so do you speak on.
It's funny, all the war games used to come out for Origins, and now they're spread out throughout the year because of the things like the P500 program at GMT.
Right.
So they just print them as they get the money for them, as the readers say they want. All right. Anyways, I think we've exhausted that subject. Let's move on.
I think we've covered it.
Yeah, exactly. I think our listeners are, you know, currently trying to figure out what's on XM radio at this point. All right. Hey, we got one listener mail this week from the username is Alex Swingle. I think that's an acronym, not an acronym, a pseudonym, a nom de plume.
A nom de plume.
Anyways,
it's a much cooler term.
He says, hey, gang, thank you for all the information you've provided when it comes to designing, packaging, cards, and other things that are involved in producing games. I have always wanted to create a board game, but I didn't know where to begin. Now I have a good idea of what to do, and I'm very excited for the future of my game. I'll make sure to inform you when it's finished. The concept is a tabletop work. Oh, you know what? I'm going to read this because he sent it to me. But, you know, all of you out there listening should consider yourselves under a non-disclosure agreement. This is binding. The concept is a tabletop war game with stealth as a main theme. It's like a mixture of Battleship and 40K. So anyways, Alex, I'm glad that we could help you out with that. Sometimes we tend to go overboard on the technical details. But you know what? It's a good thing to do sometimes. There's a huge learning curve when you're first printing a game, so we're glad we could help out. And keep listening to the show, and definitely let us know when you do get your game finished, and definitely if you get it published. Like I said, we plug the hell out of Chaosel for I forget his name already. Oops. For the guy who created Chaosel, because I, you know, helped him almost get it printed many, many years ago. So we'll help you as well if you're a big listener. And that said, Rhett.
I like the concept. Free pitches. You come to us with your stuff. Free pitches.
That's right. If you produce a game based on advice you heard in this show, one, wow.
and if we get an in-book credit for it too, you know, that you listen to us, hey, you know, there's a bowl of soup in there for you.
That's right. We'll plug your show for a year. You get us on the in the credits of a game. Yeah. All right. That said, Brett, how can other people contact us about their game?
Well, you can contact us via email at papermoney@purplepawn.com. You can Skype us at Paper Money Podcast. Or you can phone us at 773-634-9377.
And if you want to check out our RSS feed, that's at www.purplepawn.com/category/papermoney/feed.
Well, that's it for this show. I'm Rhett Kipp.
And I'm Ben Clark. I think we did okay there.